Hello, everyone, and welcome to the last 2021 edition of the Talking About podcast. I'm your host, Sean Kennedy, recording on December 31st, 2021. We did it, everyone. 2021 is in the books, both from a real life and Sixers perspective. It has been a bit of a trying year, but we've made it. Hopefully 2022 will have better things in store. But we do have good things in store for this episode. Joining me on the line is Liberty Ballers' own Dave Early. Dave, thanks for coming on the podcast again. How are you today?
My pleasure. It's good. Good to be here. Thank you.
Yep. And definitely good to be here after a week in which the Sixers went 3-0 since the last recording of the podcast. They had a very stress-free win over the Wizards, which was a very welcome change. Then they had the nail biter over the replacement Raptors, as they were dubbed, who had a lot of people on the COVID list. We're going to talk about some of the discussion surrounding the Sixers struggling to beat these teams that are very shorthanded a little later on in the podcast. But then Thursday night, very exciting win in Brooklyn, 110 to 102 over the Nets, who had KD and James Harden both available, and they both played very well, but the Sixers were just a little bit better and got the job done. So Dave, one of the things I wanted to ask you was regarding Thursday night's win. Do you view that as, where do you rank that among this season's victories for the Sixers?
Let's see. I think it should go behind the Golden State Warriors victory and above the road win against the Celtics, maybe.
Okay. So you slot it number two?
Yeah. Any I'm forgetting? Let's see.
No, I think those are definitely the most prominent ones that stuck out in my mind.
Yeah, it's just they just felt like those just popped into my mind, those games. So
yeah,
I'm gonna go with my gut.
Yeah, I think I would probably even put it ahead of the Golden State game. Just being on the road, the fact that aside from Kyrie, Brooklyn had pretty much their full. They had a few other rotation guys out, but you know, they had most of their main pieces, and KD and Harden both scored over 30. They were, you know, in true superstar mode, and the Sixers just, you know, went round for round, like trading blows with them, and it was a close game down the stretch, and the kind of game where we always feel like, oh, they're gonna blow it, and then they just didn't. Like Curry hit some big shots down the stretch, Maxey looked amazing, and Joel just looked every bit the MVP caliber player he is once again. Yeah, the Golden State win was great, obviously, because it was nationally televised and it involved shutting down Steph, and that was all awesome. But just being on the road and then Embiid waving Durant off the court, so we had that kind of like the wrestling type drama that Joel brings occasionally, that just added a little extra fire to it. I don't know. I think I was more excited about that win than I was the Golden State one, but it's splitting hairs. I think the ones you laid out are definitely the top ones of the season for sure.
Yes, yeah, splitting hairs, and I agree. Those three were really, really fun, and Joel brought the trash talking dynamic, which made, you know, people beyond our fan base to start paying attention and watching. So
yeah, what did you think about the whole the trash talk that was going on down the stretch in the post game? Durant said, like, hey, that's just us being competitors. It's we obviously have respect for each other and we recognize each other's talent and everything. I think everything KD said was definitely on point. It didn't seem too antagonistic to me, and the Brooklyn people thought it was a kind of a bush league thing for Embiid to wave them off their own court, but he was just doing what Durant had done to them a couple weeks ago, so I thought that was fair play.
Yeah, they probably forgot KD had just done it. Yeah. Literally, like, his last game that he was playing in before he went to protocol, I think, right?
He definitely hasn't played too many. I haven't been following Brooklyn that closely as much as
Pretty sure it was his last game, and he gave them the get the heck out of here. And so, you know, KD basically said, oh, no, if you follow me and Joel, we always have that competitive fire. We respect each other so much, et cetera. And I'm sure they didn't like that I had just done that to them. So, I mean, you know, Joel loves to, you know, Joel put that in his mind. And while there's always a playfulness to it with him, or usually a playfulness, that there's also just this sort of rabid competitor in Embiid that he had to get them for that.
Yeah, for sure. They've been in on all-star teams together. It's never seemed like they've had a bad relationship like Embiid has had with like a Westbrook or a couple other guys in the league. So yeah, I thought it was just, hey, we both recognize I don't know where you want to rank them, but they're obviously both top 10 players in the league and they're just going at it. And they like game recognizes game. Like that's gotta be fun to both be playing at the top of your game on a given night and just, you know, trade blows like they did. Like I'm sure Durant isn't happy to take the L, but I'm sure looking back on it, he's like, hey, that was fun to go up against a great player like Joel. And it was a great competition. So just extra drama for the fans, you know, it's all in good spirits, I think, at the end of the day. So just add a little something extra.
Katie mentioned that All-Star game. So we were even talking in the All-Star game. So we just kind of have that. And it's fun as a Embiid fan to see the very best players in the game have so much respect for him and be willing to talk about it that they get up for a game just because he's here.
Yep. And we are very fortunate to have a player of that caliber on our roster. Just a reminder, the process was worth it. another big storyline from last night was obviously Doc Rivers was not available. He was entered into the health and safety protocols a few hours before the game. So, you know, best wishes to Doc that he remains, you know, we don't know if he's symptomatic or not, but hopefully he doesn't have serious symptoms right now and he can get back to the team soon. Best wishes for him and all the other players that are currently on the COVID list for the team. But Dan Burke filled in for the Sixers as the head coach yesterday. And I think people were relatively happy with what Burke brought to the table. Dave, what did you see in his coaching debut for Philadelphia?
Yeah, I liked it. I haven't rewatched it. So, you know, it's like you'd have to see some parts of the game again to really know what stood out, what was different about coaching tactics. But off the top of my head, it looked like he was willing to break up his starting unit a little bit more. I think we saw George Niang, who had it going the last couple games. And that one drove me crazy because in the prior one, Niang was really hot. I think he went on like an 8-0 run and then came out of the game just as, was it the Raptors?
Yeah, that was the Toronto game. And then Toronto immediately like got back into the game once Niang sat, in the fourth quarter.
I was just thinking, why do we always have to be beholden to these set lineups and hockey shifts? You know, I'm not a huge hot hand guy, but I'm not a never hot hand guy. So I liked Burke's willingness to sort of mix and match Niang with Embiid. That works because it's just really, really good to have the extra spacing and the guy who loves to shoot the three. This is not going to be a knock on Tobias Harris, but you could read between the lines that the lack of, I mean, this is a funny irony that the Sixers hate that Ben Simmons is not shooting threes, but we're watching this team and there's a lot of reluctance to shoot threes by a whole bunch of shooters. Niang's not one of those guys. So it was nice to see him out there with Joel. I'd like to see those two get the chance to share the floor more.
Yeah, they're definitely a good pairing because, as you said, Niang has that quick trigger getting a shot off. It's probably him and Seth have the quickest triggers when they do decide to shoot. But Niang decides to shoot more often than Seth does, even though Seth is, you know, one of the best shooters in the league. He's been better about it this season, but he does at times seem a little more reluctant to shoot, and he's gotten kind of out of it that, and Doc has been on him like, hey, you're this amazing shooter, like just shoot the ball more, which has led to a career year for Seth. But Niang does not have that reluctance in any way, shape, or form. he's willing to let him fire. And with Joel, who is getting these double teams constantly, it's great to have this guy that just spots up and is a very good shooter. He's like 40% shooter and willing to let him get up there. That is really helpful. And it's probably much more helpful for Joel than a guy like Tobias, who, yeah, he might shoot it sometimes, but he might be reluctant and then try to like back his guy down slowly and work his way into a 14 footer. Or he could just be like on the opposite block trying to post up while Joel's trying to post up. Like, I feel like Niang definitely opens things up for Joel more than Tobias does, even though in a vacuum, Tobias is a better player than Niang. I just think that that's a more helpful partnership for Embiid. And then the flip side of that, as guys talked about in the Slack, is if you stagger the lineups and the rotations a little bit more, then Tobias can be with the second unit. And then if he's on the court without Joel, his wanting to be in the post and back down smaller guys and be more of a ball stopper offensive hub, that works a lot better if Joel's not on the court. And like we saw last year, Tobias, it's not that the second units with the Toby and bench lineups were like world beaters, but it was enough to keep those second units afloat. And it definitely was a helpful area for Tobias to get his a little bit. So yeah, having Tobias with the bench units a little bit more and having Niang with the starters a little bit more, I think makes all the sense in the world. And I think that could be a beneficial tweak for the Sixers, who, you know, given the Ben situation and how the restrictions of the salary cap are, and they have very limited avenues to kind of work around the margins within the roster. But I think that's something they could definitely look to do more.
Yeah, a beneficial tweak given the Ben situation. I'm with you.
All right. So the other thing from last night in Brooklyn was probably the best we've seen from the Joel Embiid Tyrese Maxey partnership. A lot has been made about Tyrese having to kind of find his way when Joel's back in the lineup and to harness his ball handling and offensive spark as much as possible while you're playing alongside the superstar. But it seemed like they started to really find their way last night. Embiid had 34, Maxey had 25, hit a career high 5 threes in the game. So I'm going to just say this off the top. The fact that Tyrese was able to hit 5 threes, which he's an okay shooter, but he's definitely not an above average shooter. So him going 5 from 8 from 3 is not going to happen every game. So I think that went a long way to making it work. But aside from that, I think they definitely did look to have more of a 2-man game developing than what we've seen in prior games. What did you see between those two last night, Dave?
So correct me if I'm wrong, but it felt to me like Dan Burke decided to shift Maxey to the short corner 3 and spot up much more in the half court offense than he is normally accustomed to. And I think that he got some wide open threes. I know Andre Drummond hit him with a gorgeous pass from the post. The bench unit has actually had pretty good ball movement the last couple games. They whipped it around the horn against the Raptors zone, and they looked good again with some sharp, nifty passing against Brooklyn as well. I think, I think Maxey spending a little bit more time in that short corner could be good because that is more of a sustainable wide open three for him. His shot looked like it had a little bit more lift under it in terms of arc. And if he's not, you know, it just felt like maybe it's a better use or at least another tool to have than him in the dunker spot when he's not playing on the ball.
Yeah, the dunker spot just makes no sense. That should never happen. And yeah, he did go in that corner a lot more, as you mentioned, and he hit a couple threes from that spot. And then as we saw right at the end of the game, they swung the ball around. Tobias then found Tyrese in the corner, and because he'd hit a couple shots, the defender flew out at him, and then he was able to just duck in and hit that little 15-foot baseline jumper that kind of put the nail in the coffin on the win. So yeah, it is. I think it is a lot more helpful to have him in the corner than the dunker spot, to be sure. But also just the fact that he was hitting that shot, but maybe because that's an easier shot, it's a couple feet closer than an above the break 3. Maybe that's just an easier shot for him, and they've noticed that and they want to take advantage of that. So it's definitely something to watch. We should also note Danny Green is still in the protocol. So that would be the Danny Green spot a lot of times, because Danny Green lives along for those baseline threes. So Maxey could kind of fill that role a little bit, but we'll have to see if when Danny comes back, how much that overlap would allow Tyrese to do that. I did see a little more pick and roll action though as well between Joel and Tyrese, which was encouraging. And Maxey was willing to, he took one, just came off the screen and just let it fly right away for an above the break three. And there was another where him and Joel did a little two-man action, and then he hit Joel back with a nice bounce pass, and Joel hit a three at the top of the key. I think they're finding their way, and it, given the post-game pressers between they've showed up together the last two games, and Joel gave Tyrese a little ribbing after the Toronto game, like, you looked like trash, like I did in Toronto last year. And then after the Brooklyn win, he's like, see, just shoot, like, you played great. And there was definitely some Ben subtext there, like I told you to shoot and you did, and now look what happened, you played great and we won, versus
Ben should have always listened to me.
Yeah, like I told Ben to shoot and he retired, basically. So there's a little bit of subtext there, but it seems Maxey just seems like too nice of a guy to ever let like a little constructive criticism bother him. So it does seem like their relationship's growing a little bit, both on and off the court, which is great to see.
Yeah, he did struggle a little bit, but you mentioned that pick and roll game. There was one play against, I think it was against Toronto, where Maxey got by his man, got into the lane, drew a big, dished it to Joel for a layup, and Joel like let out a yell of relief or exaltation, or like, finally an easy shot someone created for me. And it was just like, oh, right, that's not a thing that happens here very often. I guess Tyrese is one of the few guys who, I mean, Seth's done it here and there for sure.
Yeah.
Because he occupies so much, but it's still not like as often as you'd think that, you know, you watch another team play a game, Derek White can do that routinely, find, you know, Jakob Poeltl or whoever. But it doesn't happen very often in Sixersville for someone else to make a play to get Joel a very easy shot.
Yeah, it goes back to the fact that Joel just has never played with like a really good point guard. And that's obviously been just a problem for the Sixers roster as a whole for the last half decade. And while he's not a point guard, it's probably why Joel enjoyed playing with Jimmy Butler so much, just because Jimmy wasn't such a solid playmaker in the half court that like that must have been a breath of fresh air for Joel to have that available to him. But yeah, maybe Tyrese can keep growing and developing into that role. And you know, obviously he's still very young, so I have all the optimism in the world that he will. And the fact that he's going toe for toe with James Harden in a huge game like he did is just wonderful to see. And we should be very optimistic as we enter 2022, that the sky is the limit for Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah.
All right. So the other thing I wanted to talk about from this past week before we kind of go into our fun end of the year stuff was the Doc Rivers post-game press conference after the Raptors win, where the Inquirer's Keith Pompey asked him a question, which we can kind of analyze everything after I give this little recap, but I thought it was a very fair question, where Keith asked, basically, over the past 2 weeks, you've really struggled as a team to either decisively win or even win at all against some of these teams that are very shorthanded due to COVID and injuries and what have you. Like how do you feel about that? Are you concerned? Is that something you're worried about? And Doc seemed a little miffed, but I thought he gave a very good answer, which was essentially like, we were also shorthanded and no one was giving us the benefit of the doubt when we were either losing close games. They weren't saying, oh, like, that's okay that you lost because you were so shorthanded. They were just saying like, oh, why didn't you win the game? And it's the NBA and all of these guys are professionals. So even if you're missing a few of your top guys, you're still going up against the top 1% of 1% of guys in this profession in the world. And there's that you still have to bring it every given night. And a win is a win. So you just got to be happy for the wins. And if it had just ended there, I think it would have been fine. But then Keith gave a follow-up and he said, let me just ask a follow-up. Like, you seem really emotional about this and kind of like, what's the deal with that? And then Doc kind of lost it. And he said, like, he first said, it's a dumbass question that you asked. And he gave the old, you don't play basketball, so that you don't know what you're talking about, which
those guys in that locker room are enjoying this.
Yeah.
You don't get it.
And then he kind of downgraded his language a little bit and referred to it as a silly question a couple times rather than a dumbass question. But that kind of made the rounds in Sixers and NBA social media, obviously, is a little more combative than we typically see between coaches and media. So Dave, what was your take on everything, and what did you think of the whole dynamic between the two?
I could understand some underlying frustration on Doc's end in that, I mean, we're all watching, what was it like, the status of 600 players in the NBA and NFL have tested positive in December, and he doesn't have Ben Simmons already, and his players have been getting sick while fully vaccinated, and they're playing these games. So I can get some frustration focusing on, like, how many did you win by? I just thought it was weird that he seemed so sensitive to the question, because we watched it, we talked about it, we had our Slack going, following Twitter. Pretty much everyone in Sixersville was united on sort of the sentiment that Joel Embiid has often shared, like, yeah, we stunk, but we're glad we got the win. So it would have been, this never would have landed on our plates if Doc just sort of took the that approach of, yeah, we'd like to get better from a process standpoint. That wasn't our best basketball, but in this day and this time, we're very happy about it. Instead, he did seem emotional. I think he used Keith's name once or twice, which is what, you know, piqued Keith's sixth sense that this is something that deserves a follow-up. And I think Keith's instincts were right. It did deserve a follow-up. Was there a more tactful way to get there than saying you seem emotional? Maybe. But I don't necessarily think it was Keith's job to be the most tactful at that point. I think getting the answer that he got was what we all probably wanted to hear from Doc. It wasn't antagonistic. It was just out of the ordinary to me. And then the second one was annoying on Doc's end, where I just don't like hearing that you haven't played, so you don't get it, because I haven't been a pro player and I don't want anyone to tell me I don't get it. You know, it's condescending.
That's such a classic, like, dismissive statement that former players make, as if I get there are nuances to the game that people that didn't play will never understand, but asking why you're struggling against teams that are missing half their roster, I don't understand you didn't play thing there. Like, this, and especially in Keith's case, like, he's been covering professional basketball for decades. Like, you don't think he knows enough about the game at this point to ask, like, why you're struggling against certain teams? Didn't make sense.
Yeah, it's a very commonly used defense of bad coaching and bad play, to be honest. You don't get it because you didn't do this. Well, we get it, and you're not doing it good enough. That's not the case here with Doc. He was, I think he was doing his job in that win. My biggest takeaway was Doc was very defensive and sensitive to even the line of questioning that his team should have played better. So why was he feeling that way? I find interesting. It's just a particularly tough point of the year. We know he just landed on protocol, so it clearly is a tough time of the year, but that wasn't the case in that moment. So not sure why it was such a tense thing for him there.
Yeah, and again, I thought his answer was pretty good. I think for it to be he could have sounded less defensive, and he could have added, like, oh, we're always looking to improve. Like, even in wins, we look at the film, and there's always ways you can get better, and we're going to continue to try to do that. Like, he could have added that, and it would have been probably a perfect answer in my mind, and take a more neutral tone in his answer. But and I don't feel as strongly as you do about Keith's response being fair play. Like I don't think asking a coach why he seems emotional about something is, I think he definitely could have worded that a lot better. But yeah, I still think Doc was, especially calling it a dumbass question, because I didn't think the original question was a dumbass question at all. I thought it was a perfectly fair and valid question. I didn't think asking why he's emotional was completely fair, but I guess opinions can differ on that. But yeah, it's, and then going to the you haven't played angle, which is to me is just code for like, I don't really feel like I'm in the right, but I got my hackles up and I'm getting defensive. That's like the fail safe that people fall back on when they don't have a good answer. Yeah, that was kind of bad in my opinion. So little media dust up to close off 2021 for
Wild West dust up.
Yeah. We had a few of them this year in 2021 between Doc and the media. So I guess it was only fitting that the last game he coached of the year had one as well. All right. So good week for the Sixers. They, as I said, they won all three games this week. They are now 19-16 and in sixth place in the Eastern Conference. So Dave, before we go into the kind of fun year in review stuff, do you feel any differently about the Sixers team than you did a week ago coming off these few wins?
They look a little bit better the last week. There's some hope now that they can recoup some version of the group that was like 9-2 at one point. They were completely derailed by Embiid getting COVID. So, you know, I don't think they're a 9-2 type team. I don't think they're going to set that type of pace, but if they could ever just get more healthy, and I know that might be an impossibility in this season, if they could ever get more healthy, maybe there is a group that we can see where we don't worry that this is a play-in team. Maybe there's a 4 seed somewhere in their future. Maybe. I do think that there's been enough out of Joel Embiid where if you are a fly on the wall in Daryl Morey and Elton Brand's war room, you're thinking, maybe we do want to avoid flushing this season down the toilet. Maybe that we want to get all of that ideas of sneak tanking out of our heads, because man, Joel Embiid, even on a court with Kevin Durant and James Harden, he's always one of the best players in the game. So let's just take a few more of these calls than we were taking a few days ago. I think that would be my takeaway.
Well, I hope Daryl is already taking all the calls, because a little less NFT talk and a little more fielding calls from fellow GMs would be great in my mind from Daryl. But yeah, I agree with what you said. And I think Joel continuing to kind of regain his MVP caliber form, and then the partnership that we saw in Brooklyn from Tyrese and Joel, if that can really blossom, that's them kind of hitting the inside straight on with this roster and mm-hmm. getting back to not serious contender status, but pseudo puncher's chance contender status. If they can really form a 1-2 combo, which coming into the season, there was no reason to expect that, because Maxey was a young guy in the league in his second season. But if they can get there, which there's at least that possibility now, because we've seen it in flashes, then, you know, who knows? But I didn't think that was really even remotely realistic a few weeks ago. Given what we saw in Brooklyn, it's at least somewhat possible in my mind. So that changed my opinion. But yeah, I still don't think they're at the top tier, but I think they're definitely in better shape than they were a week ago.
Yeah, all right. And Brooklyn would say, we don't have Joe Harris. We still had like three guys in protocol and we're getting Kyrie back. So we're definitely going to toast you as presently constructed. You need like two blockbusters to hang with us, Daryl.
Yeah, exactly. The Sixers, they could work their way back up to the 4 seed, but then Brooklyn would laugh and say, "Oh, sure, come see us in the second round. We'll have something. We'll be waiting for you. Don't worry.
Wait to come to Philly with our big three."
Yeah, right. All right. So at this time, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor. And when we come back, we will do some year in review stuff. Have a little fun. All right. And we're back. So as I said, this is the last podcast of 2021. We're recording this early, on New Year's Eve day. So it takes, we're going to take a look back and then a little look forward. So Dave, I wanted to ask you, we're going to go over our favorite and our least favorite moments for the Sixers in 2021. What would you say your favorite moment from this past year was?
Favorite moment was no broken records for Steph Curry. Watching Matisse Thybul fit between all those picks. I mean, there were a million picks that they were setting for Steph, and he kind of bobbed and weaved through them. So that game and everything about that game was my favorite so far. The national stage, it was extra exciting, extra juice. Got to go with that one.
Yeah, just everyone nationally, like seeing the Sixers play well and seeing Matisse just shut down Steph. I wrote about this in a Matisse article I did for the LibertyBallers.com. But Peter King, who writes his Football Morning or Football Monday in America column, like referenced Matisse Thybul, just not had no idea who Matisse Thybul was. So he obviously doesn't cover the NBA very closely. Like, he's fully ingrained in the NFL world, but that just showed me how like ubiquitous Matisse's performance was across the entire spectrum of the world of sports. So it was cool for his defensive prowess to get that much shine, even outside of like NBA Twitter circles, and to do that against the Warriors, who had the best record in the league, and at home the crowd going crazy. It was just a really great moment. So yeah, very, very much a well-deserved favorite moment of 2021.
Yeah, it'd be like if we snuck in a reference to Xavien Howard, the cornerback, into one of our posts.
Which we do, because we're very much in the blogger sphere, and that's the kind of niche references we do. But
we do. I stuck DK Metcalf and Justin Jefferson in my last piece.
I saw that on your Tyrese Maxey film study, which everyone should check out on Liberty Ballers. But yeah, so it was cool for Matisse to get that kind of exposure on a national sports wide stage, not just NBA stage, because it seemed like everyone was tuned into that game because of the Steph Curry record countdown that was being driven into everyone's heads. But yeah, definitely an awesome moment and a well deserved favorite moment of 2021. For me, I'm gonna say my favorite moment, it's really a couple moments, but just the Tyrese Maxey come up has been really a joy to watch. It was in 2021 when he had his big game against Denver. It was January of 2021 when he scored his career high 39. And that was it was a game where the Sixers were missing nearly everyone due to COVID, and the game shouldn't have been played. But it was our first moment of seeing like, oh, wow, this guy, he really could be it. Just against a reasonably healthy Denver team that had like contender title aspirations last season, and they just couldn't stop him. He was hitting everything. He showed off his like lightning quickness where no one on the court could stay with him. So that was our first moment like, oh man, this league really made a mistake letting this guy drop to the Sixers. And we kind of felt like it was a huge mistake by the league, and he looked good in very limited time, but that was just the come up. And that's when we all truly celebrated Tyrese Maxey being a Philadelphia 76er. And then we also had a couple great moments this season as well. Like the Brooklyn game was obviously great. He had the 33 against the Raptors in a loss, which that was last month in Philadelphia against the Raptors. But that was back-to-back games, which they were both losses to the Bucks and the Raptors, where he went for 31 and 33. And I think that was just like the culmination of, oh, Tyrese Maxey went from promising young player to is Tyrese Maxey in the All-Star conversation? that was the culmination of that.
I still remember he had Giannis on him, and he just put his head down, drove, did one of his late little wrong leg, wrong hand, and just floated it over the help defense with Giannis on his hip. And I was like, what? Wow. This guy can finish amongst the trees.
Yeah. So Maxey, I mean, just one of the many great moments, to be sure, for Maxey, against the defensive player of the year guy, like Giannis too.
Yeah.
So Tyrese, you know, this year hasn't been great for the Sixers. We're going to talk about our least favorite moments in a second, which I'm sure there's plenty to pick from, but he has kind of lifted the collective woe is me attitude of the Sixers fan base ever so slightly. And I think if it wasn't for him, we would all be super tuned out and super pessimistic about the Sixers' future. But the fact that this guy fell to them where he did in the draft and looks to have an all-star ceiling, whether he gets there, that still remains to be seen, but that is very much a ceiling that's in play for him now, given what we've seen. I think that has just done so much to lift the collective hopes of this fan base in what has been a really trying year for them, both in the disappointment on the court and the frustrating and never-ending Ben Simmons saga. It's just been such a breath of fresh air to have Tyrese Maxey come on the scene and perform as well as he has at such a young age.
Yeah, he definitely has made lots of the $33 million gaping hole feel more palatable and more fun this season.
Yep. And we didn't mention it just because he's always so great, but shout out to Joel Embiid for continuing to be amazing. He has also done his best to make 2021 a fun year for the Sixers. It hasn't been, but it has certainly not been because of Joel Embiid.
There's only a few fan bases that can say there's an MVP, perennial MVP candidate in his prime here now, and we're watching it. And Sixers fans are one of those groups. So,
yep. Enjoy it. We don't know how long we'll have it, so you have to enjoy it while you can. All right, Dave. So, least favorite moment of 2021. There's a few to pick from.
Oh, least favorite. Well, you took Maxey as a moment, so I guess I'll take Ben Simmons as a moment. Although I come at this from a different angle than some fans, I wish he was out there. I mean, whether you want to trade for him or not, I wish he was just playing games. I think the Sixers would be a significantly better team with him in the rotation these days, especially those 3 weeks they didn't have Joel Embiid. So I think their position would be stronger in terms of trade leverage if he was out there without any worry that he's got a long-term thing and he might not even play for the team that acquires him, if anyone even wonders about that. And I think that they would have won some of these shorthanded games that they lost if they had him.
Yeah. They definitely would have. I mean, he's an all-star and one of the best defensive players in the league. So he would go a long way to cover a lot of the holes that they've had at times this season because of roster limitations and everything else. Yeah, in a perfect world, I guess he would just have kind of sucked it up and taken the criticism in stride and worked on those areas of his game a little bit and just come back and said, like, hey, I want to be traded, but I'll continue to take the court and be a professional about it and everything else. And the team would obviously...
All that is behind closed doors, basically.
Right, yeah, just that's not a public airing of these things, but, you know, let them know and Daryl can quietly work the phones and... There can be rumors, obviously, because rumors always get out, but yeah, it wouldn't be the public thing that it is right now, and the team could just kind of go about its business. And as you said, the team record-wise and performance-wise would be a lot better for it because Ben Simmons is an excellent basketball player, and right now they have nothing to show for having this guy on the salary cap and on the roster. They don't have him and they don't have whatever compensation they could get in a potential deal.
It's especially tough to see Niang the perfect fit for that, for Joel, you know, doing what people hoped once Mike Scott would do and realizing, oh, when Joel sat it, for the first time, it might not be a complete disaster with the exception of paying, you know, $110 million for Al Horford to patch that.
Yeah. So definitely sad, disappointing, continuing situation for the Sixers, to be sure. I'm going to go, first of all, shout out to Ben Simmons passing up an open dunk in game seven. But I'm actually going to go to game five of the Atlanta series. When
I could have went last season too, because it was a calendar year. I was just thinking this year. Okay.
Oh, no. Yeah. 2021.
Game seven. Game seven was just painful. Being up 24 in game five.
That's where I'm going. My least favorite moment is game five when they blew a 26 point lead to Atlanta. Yeah. Oh. So I was at that game covering the game for Liberty Ballers. And at halftime, the mood was exuberant in the Wells Fargo Center. Sixers were up big. They were absolutely just handling Atlanta in the first half. It's shocking that how well they were playing compared to how poorly they then played in the second half. But they looked amazing. It's like everyone was just thinking, like, all right, we can just party in the second half coast. Like, I think people had more on their minds, like, where they're going to go to celebrate, like, which bar they're going to head to after the game to celebrate the win, than actually what was going to take place in the second half. I know personally, I was thinking, like, oh, cool, I can probably like get my recap up really quickly because this result's basically done. And then there's just this collective dread that minute by minute took over the arena as Atlanta chipped away and the Sixers just weren't scoring. Like no one except for Joel and Seth literally made a field goal. And it people just kept looking at the clock and they're like, huh, it's a 16-point game now. That's kind of weird, but it's still fine. 16 is still a lot. And then it was like 10, and they're looking at the clock. Well, there's still some time left. Now it's 10. And then it was 4. And then the arena was literally silent. Like, you hear people, like, sitting on their hands. That's kind of like an expression. I feel like everyone was just, like, every butt in the arena was clenched, and people were just so tense. You could hear a pin drop with how worried everyone was, and then they go on to lose the game, and oh my god, like I think they go on to win game six, and I think just the swing of being up 3-2 versus down 3-2 and the burden of we have to win two games in a row now or our season's over, versus if they had just been a normal basketball team in the second half of game five, win that game, I feel like all the pressure's on Atlanta now, and the Sixers could just have played a lot better in both, like both game six and game seven. And if it came to that, I think Atlanta, if they had been down 3-2 in game six, I feel like all that pressure, that just might have been it, and the Sixers could have just gone on, and then we never even have a game seven. We don't have Ben Simmons passing, and we don't have that whole fallout, and Ben Simmons is probably playing for the Sixers this year. I still can't believe they blew a 26 point lead at home to a Hawks team that wasn't as good as they were objectively, and the Sixers had played incredibly well in the first half. Like it's the strangest thing to me. I will never understand how they played so poorly in that second half of game five.
There are 4 billion ways that the Sixers could have won that series. I mean, yeah. Joel was terrible in the second half of game four and missed a layup. I mean, just anything, pick one thing, we could change that. And they win that series and we're probably not in this Ben Simmons stalemate. You know, maybe they could shop him. Maybe they desperately want to trade him. Maybe he's, you know, desperately wants out, and maybe people can tell from the body language, but the Sixers have 4 more wins and they don't have to feel like they're up against it in terms of any phone call Daryl Morey makes.
Yeah. It's kind of the inverse of Infinity War, where Dr. Strange said, this is the 1 in 14 million or whatever ways that we can actually win. I feel like that was the 1 in 14 million ways that the Sixers could lose that series. And and that's how it went down. All right, so enough talking about the downsides of 2021. Let's look to 2022. A fun thing this time of year, and sometimes actually a constructive thing for people to do, is to make New Year's resolutions. So I wanted to go through, and we could kind of pretend we're the Sixers and we're making some New Year's resolutions. Just go through them. So Dave, what would one Sixers New Year's resolution be in your mind?
Sixers New Year's resolution would be, see, there's a few ways to go with this, huh? Well, we just did a lot of Ben Simmons, so I'll go more of a immediate on the court one. I would like to see them increase the minute stagger between Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid. I know we alluded to this, but you talked about it. One of your best moments of the season, those back-to-back 30-point games back in November. Joel Embiid, of course, was out of the lineup. And there's just been a lot more hesitancy playing around a heliocentric big who likes to position where he likes to position, which packs in the paint. So I think finding ways to create Maxey, some of those looks that he was getting with a little bit more of a spread floor, with a little bit more spot up shooting, maybe without Andre Drummond, just to see how that looks once in a while as we rehearse for a possible playoff rotation. I know Doc would never, but just to see how that looks, like, as long as we're doing resolutions, I'd like to see a little more small ball lineup. Not that I think it'll be great without Ben Simmons around, but you gotta start to try to see if you have any more switch heavy lineups, and you gotta find ways to get your best players going if they're in like a 3-game mini slump.
Yep. I agree with all that. So Doc Rivers has a New Year's resolution to stagger his lineups more. Yeah, the Maxey Embiid thing is something we've talked a lot about. And then we just talked about earlier in the pod, staggering Niang and Tobias. So,
well, what do we know? We haven't played much. So
so that is one of my New Year's resolutions. Doc Rivers should have a New Year's resolution to act like the media knows what they're talking about a little bit more. Mm. So yeah, we talked about it with the Keith Pompey blow up this week. But yeah, just even if we look back at the Atlanta series where Doc acted like it was absolutely crazy to sit Ben Simmons in close games to avoid having other teams foul him. He acted like that was absolutely insane. It was even insane to ask that question. And then what do you know, like a game or two later, he was doing it himself. So maybe it wasn't the craziest thing in the world. So yeah, Doc Rivers New Year's resolution, just pretend that the media has some idea what they're talking about in reference to basketball questions. That's another good one for Doc. So what else do you have, Dave? What would another resolution be?
Another resolution would be to, along the same lines, to mix and match where Tobias Harris plays. I'd like to see him play with the bench units more, like you mentioned, and maybe play with the starters less, because having a guy who just loves to bomb threes out there with Embiid is helpful. So continue to just more frantic iterations with these rotations.
Yeah, just more yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah, just more creativity, I think.
Yeah.
Just more willingness to experiment. I feel like that could go a long way. Yeah, this isn't last year where the Sixers had like one of the best, like most used lineups where everyone was relatively healthy for a large chunk of the season, and they played well when they were on the court together. Like that hasn't been the case. Guys have been in and out of the lineup because of injuries and COVID. Like this should be the time to experiment and see what you have with all these different guys on the court. A couple of weeks ago, Ben Diedrich tweeted out like, "Hey, this was only there was a good game the Sixers had where they closed with Matisse and Danny Green on the court together." And he looked at it and he said, like, this is one of the least used pairings, which doesn't make sense, because in a vacuum, you would think Matisse and Danny Green, they're both like 3-and-D guys. They're very switchable. They could play in nearly any lineup you could think of. Why haven't these two
best
played
wing defenders? Yeah.
Yeah. It's your two best wing defenders. They're guys that don't need the ball in their hands. So you would think like, oh, they could easily coexist in any number of lineups. Like, why wouldn't you want to see what your two best wings defenders on the court together would look like? Like that should be something we try a little bit more. Like, yeah, just stuff like that. Just more creativity, more willingness to experiment, I think.
Do you remember one of the signature wins in the first half of last year when they beat the Lakers and the Sixers played some of their best ball?
Was that the Tobias game winner?
Process era. Yeah, the Tobias game winner game. I can't remember for sure, but I think if we went and looked at the box score, we'd see that like Ben Simmons didn't play a ton of minutes with Dwight Howard in that game. And it said to me like, all right, Doc knows he's got to do certain things differently against the very best opponents in the league. And he showed that with the Matisse and Danny Green combo. Like, all right, when you play the Warriors, who win every game they play and they usually blow people out, you need to do things like that and have these, have your two wing defenders. And then they reverted and went back to tons of Simmons and Dwight in a way that made you think, are they just getting by the regular season? Do you know, because surely they're not going to do this by the second round. And I wonder about the same things with Matisse and Green. Like, surely we don't want to never play them together because they're pretty good together. Let's see where that goes. And I think that's my biggest frustration in terms of, you know, nitpicking the coaching of this team, which we probably do a little too much of, you know, when they're missing their second best player. It's easy to see all these things, but at the same time, like, play Danny and Matisse a little bit more. That's a good duo and it's worked.
Yeah, for sure. So another one I had was for Joel Embiid, just not go full Troel, but just a little bit more of his trollish ways from his earlier in his career. I'd like to see him back. I feel like it helps like him kind of harness some of his competitive fire. It gets the fans engaged. It gets his teammates behind him. So just like what we saw in Brooklyn is wonderful when he was kind of getting in the head of Montrezl Harrell against Washington and got Harrell ejected because he like goaded him into that second technical. That was outstanding. Love to see that. Just, you know, you don't have to be a 10-year-old blogger on social media, but you also don't have to be like completely absent from social media. Like, he has very good social media savvy. Like, just get back to that a little bit. And I understand he's a father now. He's a lot more mature. Like, he's not going to be the same guy that he was when he was 23 and single or whatever. But just a little bit, just a sprinkling of Joel Embiid getting back to that kind of thing, because I think A, we all enjoy it and it's a lot of fun. And then B, I do think it helps him a little bit. It gives him a little bit of that like killer instinct, that little bit of an edge to his game. So I think that'd be a good New Year's resolution for Joel to just be a little more trollish.
Find a happy medium.
Yeah. I totally understand he couldn't go on doing what he was doing, where he's like calling out Carl Anthony Towns or saying he like a wheelbarrow of bricks for all the real estate that he's building in Andre Drummond's head. Like, he doesn't need to go that far, but just a little bit. You don't need to go cold turkey, Joel. All right. So did you have any more, Dave, or should we leave off with our resolutions there?
I love health to come upon this team. We get into this time of the year where I start to hold my breath about Joel's health. You know, he was an MVP candidate in the first half of 2019. He would have been in 2020 if they didn't have such a weird roster. He was in the first half of last season and wound up being the runner-up. And right now he could be an MVP candidate for sure.
It's a tough year. It's a tough year this year. There's probably like six very legitimate candidates this year. So I don't think Joel's going to be in the conversation because the Sixers are not near the top of the standings. But yeah, he's certainly getting back to the same level of play of last year, to be sure.
Yeah, I didn't mean actually winning it, but he's playing at an MVP caliber. He's playing some of the best basketball of his own personal career. And the rest of the stuff that makes you a candidate or not is largely out of your hands and arbitrary based on your teammates and other factors. So I just really hope we can continue to see it. If it means giving him a night off every four games, I'm fine with that. You know, even if they were to lose, I just don't want to see him pick up a nagging injury and limit his play.
Yeah. All right. So resolution for the Sixers organization to give Joel Embiid some DMP rest days in the second
half. Let's work those in formulaically.
Yep. All right. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. All right. So I think those are some good resolutions for our Sixers as we head into 2022. Let's end with this, Dave, just on a personal level. Do you personally have any resolutions for the new year?
I'd rather not answer that at this time.
Okay. Fair enough.
Isn't that what Bill Belichick just said to reporters? Did you catch that?
Yeah. That was a Belichickian response.
He just loses a huge game and reporters like, do you have any resolutions? He's like, I don't want to answer that at this time.
Yeah.
Not right now. For me, let's see, try to be a better family member, friend, be sweeter to everyone around me. stay healthy and keep everyone around me healthy, basically.
Yep.
How about you?
Good things to keep in mind, given our current situation as a world. Mine are kind of dad related. So I have an almost 3 month old now. So just to make sure I'm reading a book to him every day, at least once a day, get a book read to him. Little children's books, nothing crazy.
That's a lot of books. To read the same one.
It's the same one. Like we have like a dozen or so that I pick and choose from that are in a pile in our living room, and I read to them.
What's the MVP of your book rotation right now?
So this isn't like one I read to him, but so for people that don't know, like newborns can only see in black and white. So we have a book that's like, it's high contrast images of like black spots and squares and stuff against like white backgrounds and vice versa. And it's just like different shapes against different backgrounds. So every time I open it up to him, his eyes like go wide. Like it's the most fascinating thing he's ever seen in the world. It's really, really fun to see. I didn't know that newborns always see black and white.
I definitely forgot it. I have no idea.
Yeah. So yeah, like high contrast images are something you're supposed to expose them to in their first few months to like help their eye development, and it helps like their coordination and stuff. So there's this little book I do, and it's so funny to see him, like his eyes like literally light up when he's looking at these, and it's just like shapes against a page.
What?
Yeah, but there's awesome. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, there's some good books like a baby animals book. There's a baby hedgehog book, like, you know, little animals on adventures stuff I read to them. So that's one. And then just more generally to, I made a music playlist for him of like all these classic songs from the last 50 years or so that are all, you know, don't have curse words or anything. Like I parsed them to be like family friendly ones. And I have an Amazon Music playlist to make sure I play that for him more, just more generally.
Now, is this songs like for adults or like
rock? Yeah. Like Beatles, Bowie, Aretha Franklin, nice. Jackson 5, The Cure, like all songs that I really like and that are like classics, but.
I'm going to have a precocious ear there.
Yeah.
So lots of like stimuli, like eyes and ears, brain health.
Yeah, that's the important stuff, because, you know, right now babies they're kind of like helpless blobs that just are like kind of sitting there, and they can't really do anything yet. Like you can't crawl or roll over or anything yet. So yeah, you just got to get interesting things in front of his face and that he can hear and stuff. So that's my resolution.
Our friend Brian Tolbrick was tweeting about like babies being blobs, and I thought he was talking about the Sixers for one moment. I was like, wait, who is under the bus here? But it was really just about his child.
Yeah, I also saw that. That's probably where I just got the phrase from. But yeah, I think he said like they go from helpless blobs to suddenly they are
terrorists,
engines of chaos, just like
yes,
determined to run into every single thing in your house and knock everything over and knock themselves out, and you have to constantly be on high alert. I'm not looking forward to that stage. I definitely enjoy right now. You can kind of like put him somewhere and you know he's just going to stay there. And
yeah,
that's a good, I like this stage of fatherhood. But yeah, so mine are dad related. I have my usual stuff to like exercise and stuff that I'm generally pretty good about that. So I gotta get this dad stuff in my life too.
Yes.
All right. So that does it for the Talking About podcast in 2021. Dave, thank you very much for joining me again. Where can people find you and your work?
I'm at David Early on Twitter. DavidErly. I write for Liberty Ballers. I'll be on podcasts here like this one. And I also write for Clutch Points on the Brooklyn Nets. I have a podcast there called Nothing But Nets.
All right. So yeah, get a little information on the enemy to be sure. If you're a Sixers fan out there, check in with that stuff. Dave, thanks for joining me, and everyone out there listening. Hope you have a great New Year's Eve. Stay safe. Don't drink and drive. I know the surge pricings on Uber and Lyft can be a little crazy, but it's worth it. Don't risk it. Be smart. And have a safe and wonderful New Year's, and we'll talk to you next week.
Happy New Year. And yeah, let's just all make it through the holidays healthy.
Yep. All right. Best take care. Yep. Absolutely. Take care, everybody.